welcome back to Retrospective. I am Jason Mann, and joining me in our annual pre-WrestleMania tradition is Sawyer Paul of International Object. Sawyer, welcome back to the show, sir.
I'm very, very happy to be back here.
Well, it's nice to have you back, and it's nice to be back. We got some nice feedback on a previous show on the Bret Hart versus a Steve Austin feud, which was a lot of fun to do. So hopefully try to get one of these out every month or so. Not promising anything, because those promises have been not fulfilled before, but hoping that is the case, sort of the goal. So we are going to talk about today the main event of WrestleMania 31. It is Brock Lesnar defending the WWE World Heavyweight Championship against Roman Reigns. So, and in this thing, where Roman Reigns is a plucky young underdog trying to overcome the odds to battle against the establishment champion, and you know, obviously things have changed a whole lot since this match has occurred.
It's almost a completely different WWE since 1 year ago today, where Roman Reigns was the challenger going up against, you're right, some might say an authoritative champion.
Maybe. You could say authoritative is a pretty good word for it. Yeah. So, you know, the tension, I think, with Roman and the tension with a lot of top WWE heroes, you know, really starting with John Cena, is there's kind of this battle between a group of grassroots fans versus the, you know, kind of the establishment that controls WWE, the, you know, Vince McMahon or, you know, the voices, whoever are in WWE management, you know, Triple H these days, you know, whoever's behind the curtain. It doesn't really matter who it is. The key thing is that there seem to be very different ideas between this very vocal group of fans who kind of rejects what they feel like WWE is feeding upon them, and they want more, I guess, authentic, more, they want a different experience than what WWE wants to give them a lot of the time. And that's kind of been, you know, the tension in WWE, and, you know, and it's obviously seeping into the storylines and these crowd reactions. We'll definitely talk about how that crowd reaction is dealt with in this match. But you know, there's so many times where that has happened over recent years. So I kind of wanted to get into that idea a little bit as well, as of this, you know, of what kind of feeds this whole grassroots idea. You know, I think it connects to kind of a lot of things that are, you know, might be going on, you know, in politics or just in, you know, in the world in general. And I'm curious as to your opening thoughts on that subject.
Well, honestly, I think that's going to be the meat of this conversation. I think we could talk about the match, and we'll absolutely talk about the match. But the match is pretty short, and there's not a whole lot to say about it. It's one of the shorter WrestleMania main events, actually.
Yeah, certainly recent ones. You know, I think some of the Hogan ones are pretty short, but this is definitely, you know, this is sub 20 minute main event, which is, you know, pretty rare in recent WWE history.
So it's interesting that you say that in recent years that it seems like WWE has an issue with the sort of the person that they believe should be the sort of figurehead, like the franchise player of the company, coming at odds with what the fans think should be the franchise player of the company. I do think it's gotten a lot louder, this conversation, over the last few years, certainly spearheaded by, I would say, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, two performers that you could say are definitely on the sort of fan-picked side of things, mm-hmm. versus, say, a Roman Reigns or a John Cena, which would be on the side of WWE believes these are the performers that they should put in sort of the lead spot of the show, because they, for whatever reason, you say merchandise, or, you know, just puts butts in seats. People watch these characters more, or they believe that they'll watch these characters more, for whatever reason that they decide to make these guys the main figures of the show. It comes down to, I believe, actually a problem with wrestling fans and the people who make the wrestling show disagreeing about what professional wrestling is. And And I think the fans believe that professional wrestling should be this thing that they largely get to decide. And the people who are making WWE, whoever that is, they feel like they should get to decide.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes both sides are able to come to some kind of agreement about this. I think there were, I mean, we have WrestleMania 30, right? We had, like, that happened.
We talked about it.
WrestleMania 30 happened, yeah. Where WWE decided, you know what? The person who the fans want to see be the lead, let's make him the lead for this show.
Yes.
Just this show.
Right.
But this show.
Very much just this show, but yes. Yeah. And of course, you know, Daniel Bryan, the couple of months after that event, the signs didn't look good, but, you know, with the injuries and with the absences that he had and everything that happened leading to his retirement, I don't think that's necessarily a fair guess as to exactly how things would have turned out for him, but the initial signs were not good.
No. You're absolutely right. It's one of those. I think on both sides of the fence, people are going to go, "Oh, damn, that was unfortunate." Even WWE management would say, "Damn, that was unfortunate."
Sure.
Because we did finally decide he was the guy.
Yes.
They
yes.
may have kowtowed to the fans in that they may have lost the argument to the fans there, but they did decide that he was the guy. They let WrestleMania 30 happen.
Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful experience.
I mean, hell, they let WrestleMania 20 happen.
They did. They let WrestleMania 10 happen. You know, it's every even. You know,
yeah. Every now and then they do this.
We get our wrestling champ.
I can't wait. I will say this as a lifetime wrestling fan. Yeah. I can't wait for WrestleMania 40.
It's going to be pretty exciting.
I think that one's going to be big.
They're gonna give us our wrestling champion at WrestleMania 40, and then something terrible is going to happen a few years after that.
Oh my God! Why does this keep happening?
I don't know. But, yeah, so we get WrestleMania 31, which, you know, WrestleMania 31 also I feel like it fits a little bit into the pattern of 11
yes, it really does.
And 21, because we had, you know, Batista sort of the next big thing at 21.
Yep.
The reaction there is maybe not exactly what people would have liked. It certainly wasn't hostile to Batista, but it was not, I felt like kind of that Triple H got the cool entrance. And
I didn't think that in 2005, WWE fans knew they were allowed to be hostile. I think they learned that in between.
Yes. I feel like that started like 2006, 2007. It really started with Cena.
It started with Cena and yeah. Letting the ECW people in the building.
Right. That was a huge mistake in retrospect for
that
them.
That was their mistake, yes.
Yes. Right.
Don't do that.
It's like the Republican Party embracing the Tea Partiers. You know, it's just sort of like, you know, once you get them in the building, then they're just going to take over and it's going to be a problem. So
send your emails to Jason, not me.
Wrestlespective@gmail.com if you want to send me your strong thoughts on things.
On
I will
how the ECW fans are the Tea Party.
Well, I'm not saying the parallel is perfect, but I do feel like, you know, there it's a strong grassroots base that has strong ideas about what it wants, even if those ideas make sense or even if they don't. You know, I'm not necessarily here to, you know, completely judge their ideas.
This is just my humble opinion. I'd like to think that you would not have said that on a podcast with someone else.
I would not have said.
I would not have gotten that out of you. Like, someone else would not have gotten that out of you.
I feel like
that's what I bring to this.
I think that's true. I mean, I do feel. I mean, we've done many podcasts together, so I do feel like there's our comfort level, there's our ease. It's just like talking to an old friend. So,
absolutely.
So setting up here, I don't need to get into the nitty gritty because honestly, I don't really remember it because I wasn't watching that closely during the time and it's not that important.
It super isn't. However, that I will say, having watched it out of context now, that opening video makes the story seem great.
They usually do. Like, they're usually most, that's what they, you know, those videos, they do such a wonderful job of capturing just like the key signature
parts,
moments.
Yeah.
And they obviously, you know, kind of, you know, they build those moments with that sort of in mind. They're able to kind of capture, even if you take, like, you know, they take out all the bad and they take out all the boring and take out all the dull and they just hit the good spot. And, you know, 95 or more percent of the time that you're going to get something that's pretty good just because, you know, you're going to hit the right beats. It's going to be, Yeah, it's a song you've heard before, but it's still a song you like.
It's one of those things where it's like, I wish more people just watched the pay-per-views, because I feel like we'd have happier wrestling fans.
Yes.
Like, if you just watch WrestleMania 31 and not the 6 weeks before WrestleMania 31, it's such a good time.
Yes, that which is what I did. So that was, it was a good time for me.
A winner is you, Jason. Genyo.
I like to think of myself as a winner.
Yes, you are. Absolutely, in this case. But yeah, that opening video is awesome. The stuff from Paul Heyman is really good. And the whole thing actually kind of made me like Roman Reigns a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's sympathetic notes here.
Right. And you're kind of, the emphasis is like, you know, Roman Reigns, you're this really talented, you know, guy who's worked really hard. And, you know, you're this plucky, likable guy. And, you know, you've got all these things, but you know, Brock Lesnar is just such on another level, and if this were a different time, you know, maybe you'd have your chance at winning here and being the champion, being the franchise, but Brock Lesnar's in the way, and he's just such on this incredible another level that you don't have a chance here.
I mean, and how super true is all of that?
Yes. Yeah. And Lesnar obviously is such a tremendous different presence. He just adds this level of fierceness and intensity and danger in his matches, particularly his best matches, that are so different from really anything else in WWE, which, you know, makes him obviously a interesting attraction and has made, you know, the vast majority of his matches since his return, you know, incredible to watch. And this being up there, I think, in that level, even though, you know, again, it's not a particularly long match.
The thing with Brock is I feel like, going back to what we were saying before about this difference between what the WWE fans want and what the WWE producers want, I feel like both of them really agree on him.
Yeah. And of course, you know, WWE, producers do not have access to Lesnar as a full time, you know, he's past that, you know, they only have him on a limited basis, so they can't, you know, emphasize him like, you know, in a different era, he'd have been champion for like four straight years, and he'd just been the monster that everyone tried to slay. And, you know, he would not have, you know, he would just would have been this thing where, you know, how are we going to beat this guy? How is this going to happen? I mean, that's more of an NWA thing than a WWF thing. But, you know, you get the idea. I mean, I think it's just another era. He would have just been so huge and such. I mean, he's huge in his own way now, of course, but he would have been, yeah, he would just been this like dominant champion that would have been, you know, on top forever until they found something that would have beaten him. But obviously we're not in that era. So,
I mean, he was certainly on top for a really long time for what modern audiences are used to. The sort of you can count Lesnar's WWE Championship reign and CM Punk's very, very long WWE Championship reign as two throwbacks to the 80s and 70s in terms of keeping a championship on someone for the majority of the year, or over a year in Punk's case.
Yeah.
A very much an oddity. But Lesnar, so he won the title at SummerSlam 2014
yes.
Against Cena in ludicrously dominant fashion.
Yes.
And I think it's, in watching WrestleMania 31, it's important to have the match with Cena in the back of your head, because they're two very similar performances that mirror each other in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Lesnar is obviously basically the same character, although I feel like before the Cena match, we'd seen him win and we'd seen him lose and we'd seen him have these really powerful performances. But the Cena match was the one where we all just went, okay, he's on another level now.
Yes. Yeah. And that was, you know, that was boosted some, of course, by him beating Undertaker at WrestleMania 30. And in another pretty dominant performance and a obviously surprise everyone in the building finish and, you know, incredible moment. The first Cena match when he came back at Extreme Rules 2012, I think does share some of that. It certainly has that experience of the ferocity and, you know, it is very one-sided for the most part, although Cena ends up sort of winning that match on a fluke. So it's obviously not quite the same experience, but, you know, those are like the three that really stand out to me as the ones where he has that level of like, you know, that level of like, oh wow, he's on another level. And I think this, the SummerSlam one you know, that's like the cherry. I mean, that's the like the final one. Like, oh wow, you know, this we're doing something really interesting with him now, rather than kind of, you know, going, you know, back and forth, and you know, putting in matches with Triple H where there's basically like 50-50, and you know, things like right. that. So
it's funny that like Triple H is the one guy that they had Brock do the 50-50 thing with, and now Triple H is in sort of Brock's position going into WrestleMania 32.
Yes, it is Brock sort of funny that how that works.
It is, isn't it? It's almost like Triple H kind of feels like he's usurping Brock, maybe.
Yeah, huh? It's weird how Triple H would get a position of power and then would suddenly, you know, put himself in the signature spot at the biggest show of the year. That is funny how that works.
It really is.
Yeah. Yeah. So more back to kind of the struggles with Reigns a little bit, or struggles, like at least in getting a significant portion of the crowd to kind of get behind him.
Right. So this video that makes him look sympathetic out of context looks really great, but unfortunately most wrestling fans did watch the months before WrestleMania 31.
Sure.
And were very, very tepid, if not outright hostile towards them choosing Roman Reigns.
Yeah. Now, do you think there's anything about Roman Reigns himself that just lends itself to like anything about his personality or performance or anything that sort of like you think that he kind of lacks that, you know, if he were just a bit of a different performer, people would kind of gravitate to him more, even if he's, you know, this you know, homegrown management backed guy who people are gonna naturally a lot of people are gonna naturally kind of have a little bit of a tepid feeling toward?
So I don't want to be mean to the guy,
okay,
because I like him. I actually really enjoy his ring work. I really enjoy his performances. And I feel like over the last few years, he has put in a number of great matches and a number of great performances in teams and on his own. However, I will say there are two major flaws to the character they've written for him. And I'm phrasing that in a way that I don't necessarily know that it's his fault if he's bringing this to the character or if they're saying, you need to play it like this. I think the first problem with him is that his character doesn't seem to care at all mm-hmm. about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing seems to faze him. Nothing seems to make him angrier for more than a second. Nothing seems to affect his character on any sort of way. He brushes things off in a way that, like, and the fans get angry at John Cena when he does the exact same thing. He just sort of like brushes off a plot point as if it means nothing to him, which undermines the entire reason you're faking this thing in the first place. Yes. I think.
I feel like
we all agree.
Yeah, I feel that's a Kevin Nash thing.
It's such a Kevin Nash thing.
Yes.
There's so many things about Roman Reigns that remind me of Kevin Nash
yes.
that make people hate him.
Right.
And it's one of the things that makes Kevin Nash such a fantastic bad guy and a really terrible good guy.
Yes.
And this was true with Kevin Nash when he was in WWE, when he held the WWF title for a year.
Yeah, at WrestleMania 11.
At WrestleMania 11.
Yes.
Which echoes WrestleMania 31 a lot.
Right.
And it's what made Kevin Nash such a bad good guy in WCW in like 98-99.
Right.
He's such a good bad guy and such a lousy good guy.
Sure.
And there's so many of those traits that Roman seems to have that makes all of us go, can we just make him a bad guy already?
Sure.
Because he'd be great at it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to say is that I think his, and this is just from a graphic designer standpoint, I think his color palette makes a lot of people take no notice of him whatsoever.
Yeah.
The one huge advantage John Cena had over anyone else, he is a colorful character and dresser. Like his merchandise was really colorful, bright, easy to see. I lose Roman in the ring.
I think that's a good point. I do think his outfits are uninspired and I'm not sure he needs like be, you know, like super colorful, but you know, like some silver, like just something that's not black or something that's
right,
not.
It's not just me, right? I think like he's just so like they just like just black is his color. That's his whole thing, and like there's a little flecks of very dark purple in there. Like, it doesn't work for me.
And it covers his whole body. And that, you know, that just maybe just a physique thing or a comfort thing. But yeah, it's like very much, he's wearing a strange outfit for like a, you know, for a guy who's doing what he does. That's just unusual. I mean, I know Undertaker wears a full, you know, a full outfit. I mean, mm-hmm. there are guys who do it, so it's not like he's the only person ever. But yeah, it is very bland. I don't know I'm not mm-hmm. a designer. I don't know exactly what you would want to do to kind of splash it up exactly, or what the best thing would be. But I do think I thought it worked fine for the Shield. I thought that, you know,
yes.
they had the same outfit, and that, and for the act that they had, and for the characters, especially, you know, when they were villains. Like, I think it worked fine. But yeah, it's, you know, the fact that they never have had him emerge from that at all. Have they ever changed his music, or does he always have the same Shield music?
He's always had the same music, and that music is also, it's very brown, it's very one note. It doesn't, it's not inspiring. You can't whistle it. Like, there's nothing, there's certain things that you want your franchise player to have that he just doesn't have.
The fact that you brought up that you can't whistle it just amused me for whatever reason.
That's true. I'm sorry. You might totally hate John Cena and Hulk Hogan and the other franchise players of WWE, but their theme music sticks in your head for your entire life.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Even Diesel had the horn, you know, so.
It's right back in my head right now. Diesel's music.
There you
it's
go.
Already there. Yeah. It has a whistle in the song.
It does. It does literally have a whistle. That's true.
And Kevin Nash's theme forever should just be the Wolfpack song, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I do literally like the Diesel theme, though. So I think I'm okay, honestly, with even the NWO. I think in different contexts, I think different songs are fine for him. You know?
Except for his TNA music. That was bad. That was not good.
I don't even remember his TNA music. But
it's so bad.
I believe you. I mean, yeah, I'm not surprised.
You know, you shouldn't be.
The start for Roman was not that great because, you know, he and the Shield after WrestleMania 30, they had a actually really well-done feud with Evolution. And the Shield won, you know, two really good matches, especially the second match, which was like a, you know, no holds barred, false count anywhere kind of thing. And, you know, the Shield won decisively, and it was like one of those, like, oh, you know, kind of feels like these guys, you know, these young guys getting over on these old guys in a passing the torch thing. And then the next night, out of nowhere, Seth Rollins turns against both guys and then becomes a bad guy. And then it just like felt like a really weird, like, timing and, you know, kind of a have your cake and eat it too kind of thing. Where, you know, it made sense to kind of split them, and it made sense for Rollins to, you know, be a villain, but just doing it in that way just felt like just like a big cheat, I guess, in the wrong way. Sometimes you can cheat people and get them mad, and that's good, but in that way I always thought it was kind of bad. And
there's great ways to break up teams, and there's lousy ways to break up teams.
Sure.
And I agree with you. I think that was a lousy way to do it.
Yes. And he won the Royal Rumble, but the fans rejected it despite him standing in the ring at the end with The Rock holding up his hands. The Rock being kind of the one guy, you know, almost never gets booed. And which is, of course, 2 years in a row of fan rejections at the end of the Royal Rumble. That was mitigated this year by Triple H, a bad guy, winning the Royal Rumble. So, you know, they at least avoided that this year. But, yeah, 2 years in a row of, you know, really massive fan rejections of the Royal Rumble finish, Reigns being the recipient of it this year. So yeah, anything else to talk about of the heading into the match?
Well, the Rumble was lousy, and I don't know if you remember that Fast Lane main event, that pay per view that they did before.
Oh yeah, that's right,
WrestleMania
with Daniel
where
Bryan.
They tried to sort of satiate the WWE fans by saying, look, we know you still really believe in Daniel Bryan and want him to still be in the main event, so we're gonna have him lose to Roman Reigns so that your support will somehow pivot to Reigns. I think that was their honest plan.
Yes.
And it still baffles me that they thought that would work. Like, so we'll have them do a 20-minute match that was only okay, and then all is forgiven, I guess.
That one kind of baffled me as well. I don't think I saw that match, so I cannot judge it. But yes, it, I mean, I guess maybe they just had to address the elephant in the room to get it off, and they just were like, okay, this is the best we can do, and then we'll do it, and then we just move on. So
I think they did something very similar with Dean Ambrose and Triple H this year.
Yes. Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, during the introductions, Michael Cole mentions that Brock has just re-signed a big contract with WWE, which is just a weird story point. I mean, it happened in real life too, but it's like that actually got like, I think like SportsCenter coverage and was like it's just sort of an odd like thing to have like included, like almost like a sign of like desperation of trying to get this, trying to get big attention for this, which should be like theoretically like, yeah, Brock should want to work for WWE because it's this great place, and you know, it's like one of those like just sort of WWF like almost like working too hard to make itself seem small.
I think it was something that was sort of in the back of fans' minds because people who you know read the internet knew that Brock signed a, I believe it was a 3-year deal and came in just after and came in 2012.
Sure.
So here we are in 2015 and well, we his deal's up and we all kind of remember WrestleMania 20 and we all learned that he didn't re-sign.
That's true.
Like 2 days before WrestleMania 20 and the entire building decided to boo him to death. And so I think what they were doing here was trying to say no.
He's coming back. Don't do it.
Yeah, he's coming back. He's fine.
Yes,
we still got him.
That's a fair point. That should have entered my mind, but for whatever reason, did not.
I think I heard that too, and I was like, oh, they have memories. Yeah.
They do.
What happened with him?
Yes. Yeah.
So it was also kind of the beginning of SportsCenter, like somewhat regularly covering wrestling.
Right. Yeah. They kind of have a relationship with WWE that they're. Relationship with WWE sort of started there and getting more mainstream attention for wrestling. So,
I think WWE is cutting ESPN a check every month.
Yeah, probably. There's some quid pro quo, I would imagine.
Yes.
JBL compares Roman's first year as a single star to Earl Campbell in football and Lesnar himself. So, using sports metaphors to,
I've heard of one of those people.
Yes, yeah. I guess with the idea that he's this big sensation that has established himself strongly and has all this potential to be one of the greats of all time. Interestingly, Lesnar sort of like after that sort of disappointed a little bit. But you know that was a long time ago. We don't remember that part of it. So
So.
This is a pretty much, as we alluded to, this is pretty much a Lesnar dominates the match with Roman getting a few things in here and there, but basically Lesnar taking about 90% of the match, and then there's a mishap where Lesnar runs into the post, and then we get a bunch of attempts from Roman to take advantage of that and to overcome the odds to beat Lesnar, and then normally we would get a resolution there, but something crazy happens and we'll get to specifically what it is, but this format of match, not that it is unusual in, you know, it's a pretty typical formula for a wrestling match. But the way it is executed reminds me a lot of Sting versus Vader.
Oh yeah, huge. Now, but before we get into talk about the match proper, I do just want to make a quick note about the entrances.
Sure.
I have a weird theory about Roman Reigns is that he kind of got the main event spot because someone came up with a cool idea for his entrance. Like, he comes through the crowd, he gets into the ring, he does that Superman punch thing into the center of the ring, and then the cameraman who's outside the ring on the floor, starts walking around in a semicircle, keeping his eye on Roman, but also with his camera up tilted a little bit to the edges of the stadium as fireworks go off in a clockwise and counterclockwise fashion, which makes Roman look like he punched the arena and it exploded.
Yes.
And that's an awesome entrance.
That is good. Yes, that is a very creative use of the camera and and of the pyrotechnics and everything to, you know, kind of combine that into one thing. That is sort of a bit unusual, a bit outside their wheelhouse.
I feel like they actually left some money on the table by not having Brock Lesnar come out. Now Brock Lesnar got fireworks too, and it looked his entrance was really good too, and very like intimidating, right? But I feel like they left some money on the table. You know the thing where he does where he jumps onto the ring and he pulls the rope just a little bit like the Ultimate Warrior,
mm-hmm.
And it used to be that fireworks would come out of the turnbuckles, but they don't do that anymore. What should have happened was the entire building should have exploded in fireworks as he pulled the ring. He pulled just to be like, you know what, your entrance was good, mine was better.
Yeah, that's nice. I do like that idea. That is good. You always make good notes about the entrances. I'm hit or miss with the entrances. Sometimes I'm good about them. Sometimes I just get to the match because I'm a little bit impatient. But
I hear you. Most of the time, entrances I can totally miss. But yeah.
The WrestleMania ones are generally
the WrestleMania ones. They put a lot of effort into them.
Yes. Yes.
So, anyways, yeah, the match. Lots of suplexes.
There are, yes. We get the introduction of the famous Suplex City bitch, which adorned
on
many.
Suplex City number 4, that one comes out.
Yes, yes. Lesnar himself says it, which has adorned now many a t-shirt, I guess. So, wrestling fans everywhere.
It's a whole t-shirt dynasty.
It is a t-shirt dynasty, yes. I
they make a different one for every town.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's, you know, you could make like a James Brown song about with every town a Suplex City,
that's good franchising.
Or like dancing, you could maybe like change like Dancing in the Streets to Suplex in the Streets, you know, and just name all the songs in there, you know.
Awesome.
I'd like to see like Lesnar and maybe even Lesnar and Roman. They could do like the Mick Jagger and David Bowie dancing that they do in that video.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's just me.
I do feel like the Cena match, for whatever reason, eliminated like 5 suplexes that Brock Lesnar used to do, and now he just does Germans.
Well, he did a few different ones, but yes, the German is definitely kind of that is the most popular one. That's true. I mean, he does a belly to belly here. He does a couple of different ones, but I mean, you're right. The German is the suplex of choice in this match and in Lesnar's general moveset. So we begin with Lesnar getting a waist lock quickly, taking him into the corner. Roman does fight him, but we get the first German suplex, and immediately we get an F5. Mm-hmm. Lesnar, instead of covering, decides to pause and wipes a small cut under his eyes and sort of stalks for a little bit. The announcers question his tactics, but then just sort of decide, well, they feel like he has him, so why not continue with the beating? I guess I don't really – I'm never really going to understand that tactic, but
– No,
but
Monsoon would have hated that.
He would. He definitely would have hated that. I mean, we grew up with Gorilla Monsoon, like, insisting that, yeah, you have to cover whenever possible, so
– Go for the pin, and don't do a move where you end up on your back.
That's true.
That's stupid.
That's true. And lock in the abdominal stretch, get the leg behind the ankle, you know, get the foot behind the ankle. Don't half-ass it, so –
This is the point in time in the podcast where we remind everyone that we are 700 years old.
Approximately, yeah. I haven't done the math in a while, but I do think that Roman does a nice job conveying desperation here. Lesnar pounds Roman with knees to the chest and a fisherman's throw. He is unable to knock Lesnar down off the ropes in a bit of a comeback, and then Brock hits another German suplex. Roman then decides to hold the ropes and smiles. It's kind of the first time he is sort of
shown any emotion in his entire career.
I guess so. Although he's showing emotion by also like by playing it cool, like, you know, like I'm a cool smiley guy. I'm not worried about you. You know, it's a little bit Raven-ish, but without like the sinister intentions that Raven generally has when he does it.
Yeah, it's a little Raven. It's a little John Cena. It's like it's a little Nash. Even
yeah.
You know, it's a little bit of this like this isn't affecting me ness, and I don't think the crowd enjoyed it because they were already sick of Roman not being affected by things.
Right.
I kind of enjoyed it because I thought, hey, maybe they're actually adding something to his character.
Yeah.
Maybe there's this thing that happens when Roman gets knocked totally loopy where he becomes something else.
Right.
But like they only did it for this match.
Yeah.
And they don't ever explain it. They never asked him what the deal was with the smiling.
What's the deal with the smiling?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They can have Seinfeld guest host.
Sure.
Raw.
Yeah, it seems. Yeah, that seems reasonable.
But like that it's cool. It's interesting that it happens, but like it's not for anything and it doesn't serve anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What's your thoughts on his behavior while being destroyed?
I think it works in the context of the match. And I do think like he kind of shows enough fighting spirit as things go along that it's sort of at least for a few moments when he's making his comeback and it looks like he might actually win the match, the crowd is not completely hostile to the idea just because of the way it's being executed. That's not necessarily a lasting thing, but I do think I think he showed something here that I have rarely seen from him in other matches, at least in other singles matches. So I think it's good. I think it's also, yeah, bad that they abandon it. I'm not sure it necessarily would have worked long term, but at least you're right. It was something.
It was something. Yeah.
Right.
Do you remember? I mean, you remember the last couple of years of WCW when like Scott Steiner would have matches where he would suplex guys for like he would do 10, 12 suplexes and he would just sort of stand around while they slowly got up. Why does this work now and it didn't work back then?
Because we can tell that like Scott Steiner is a shell of himself. Sure. Even though he had like. He had a similar like sense of like menace and craziness, and like he might do anything like at any point to like a fan. Like he might actually hurt somebody, but when he actually got into the ring and tried to wrestle, it just didn't look. He was such a shell of what he had been at one point. Like if he had just come in and like had always been like that, it might have worked better because we hadn't seen the old Scott Steiner, but we had, and at that point. It was all cosmetic, and some good personality, but it didn't translate at all into the ring.
Very true. Yeah. So second F5, right? We're at that point.
We're a little bit, where are we? I think we're a little before that, but,
JBL says something like, Roman Reigns is the best we have to offer.
Yeah, but he says that Roman Reigns is the best we have to offer. He also says that that Brock is the most the most dominant champion at this point in his career. Which
yeah, it's such a fascinating like he had to throw such a modifier on that.
Right.
Like, and you couldn't just say that Brock Lesnar was the most dominating champion ever.
Yeah. And I wonder if if they are, or JBL himself is just cognizant of, like, trying to couch something so that he doesn't feel like he has to say something that's incredibly stupid.
Greatest night in the history of our sport.
Right. I'm, you know, it is. Are we trying to avoid the greatest night in the history of our sport? You know?
I think so. I think he's trying to avoid that because I think he knows that people watch the show after it's aired.
Yeah, well, which is fair. I mean, this is like we're in an era now where that's expected. I mean, you know, WWE has. I mean, that's a big selling point of the network. That you can watch any old show that you want to, and now they have to worry more about feature proofing stuff than they did before.
Yep, and this was WrestleMania play button, so...
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you can play it anytime.
Yeah.
So Roman, after smiling, he brushes Lesnar's face. Lesnar hits him with a back suplex. Then Lesnar toys with Roman for a little while. He does come back with a couple of tight right hands, but Lesnar cuts him off with another suplex, and there's more smiling.
It doesn't really help the criticism that Roman's not a great wrestler when, like, I'd say, what, 90% of his moveset in this match is right hands?
Yeah, I mean, no, I guess not. I mean, I think in the, I don't know if him showing a variety of moves is beneficial to this match and the story he's telling, since he's basically, like, he's overmatched here, but he's kind of getting by, like, on toughness and a little bit of guile.
I suppose throwing some hammerlocks wouldn't have really helped his cause either.
Yeah, or like having like fancy elaborate moves like that. That would not necessarily have been a good, like, I mean, basically like getting a quick shot out of nowhere kind of thing is his best hope to beat Lesnar, because he doesn't really have anything else. And then the one thing he can do is punch hard and and come off the ropes and kind of hit his signature stuff. So
I guess the big contrast there is that Brock Lesnar isn't really punching him; he's wrestling him.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, he's hitting him with really hard stuff, and he's hitting him with really hard knees, and he's after a few more suplexes, he nails some hard knees into Roman's sternum, drops him on the ropes, and repeated knees to the chest as the ref tries to call him off. So he's hitting him with hard blows, but it's not like, you're right, it's not like a lot of punches. There's some forearms, there's some things like that, but yeah. It is, you know, it's maybe like 20% of that kind of stuff, and it's the rest of it's kind of just suplex and locks and that kind of thing.
Lesnar really isn't much of a puncher, in terms of his style. He doesn't actually throw a whole lot of punches. You're right, forearms, knees,
yeah, elbows, that kind of stuff. Yeah,
like elbows. It's you know, I mean, it's maybe a little cliche to call it MMA inspired, but
sure.
I think that's a good contrast between what you were saying earlier and what I'm sure we'll get to more about the Sting Vader metaphor, but Vader was definitely a puncher.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think he was more than, I mean, I think he would do kind of the forearms, and I mean, he mm-hmm. was, he was very much a puncher. I mean, he was a striker. I think the strength that they both had is they both obviously had that ferocity, had that incredible size and strength and athleticism, and could just do crazy stuff for their size. And they both seemed really scary and really hit their opponents hard and could hurt them. And, you know, and in a way in which, like, it made the match more exciting, maybe did not make them favorites for other wrestlers. But but as far
as... Do you think people hate having to wrestle Brock Lesnar?
I don't know. That's a good question. I have not heard as much of, like, you know, you always heard the complaints about Vader. Now, I'm not really as in tune with wrestling rumors and, you know, and knowledge that I used to be. But I don't, you know, I don't recall reading anyone in the, you know, last 3 or 4 years, however long he's been back, that as there have been major complaints about that. Maybe people just know better not to do it because it's, you know, not really going to matter.
Maybe they know that snitches get German suplexes.
There you go. That's a fair point. So there's a big move where Lesnar sends Roman off the ropes into the barricade with a big forearm. Roman then crawls into the ring, almost making it in at 9. Reigns then catches Lesnar as he sort of charges into the ropes. It didn't really look great. I think he was supposed to kind of get him with a knee or something, but it didn't really, you know, the fans booed it. You know, Lesnar's kind of forced to sell, but it didn't seem to really make the best contact. At this point, Reigns gets a bit of a flurry with a knee to the head and a few kicks. But then Lesnar pretty much immediately catches Roman's leg and then nails him to the floor with a really fierce clothesline, which JBL compares to Stan Hansen's. And it's fairly apt. That's a pretty good, that was a pretty strong clothesline.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Does it have to be strong to call it a lariat? Or is that just like the Japanese word for clothesline?
I don't think it's originally Japanese. I think it's more like wrestling promotions that were cowboy, influence kind of called it the lariat. I think the cowboy wrestlers called it the lariat, and it was called clothesline in other areas. I think it just became dominantly known as clothesline because that happened to be WWF's name for it, and then lariat kind of caught on more in Japan because Stan Hansen is totally my guess. Yeah. So
I really like thinking of it as a lariat. Like I like to think of it as like if the clothesline kills you, it's a lariat. If the clothesline just kind of knocks you down, it's just a clothesline.
I think that's fair. I just the clothesline has always been the word because it was ingrained in me as a 7-year-old that it was that's a clothesline, even though lariat's like the cool word for it, you know. Like
I think I first heard of lariat actually. I was reading like a wrestling magazine in like 1991 or something like that. It would have been, yeah, I don't even remember what it would have been called, but it was. I remember reading this story about Hulk Hogan and how he would use something called the lariat when he was in Japan.
Right.
And it's like, what is that?
Yeah.
What kind of crazy awesome move is Hulk Hogan doing? Is it some flippy thing? No, no, it's clothesline.
Yes. It was nice. He had a good clothesline though, you know.
He did. He had a really good clothesline.
Yeah.
No one knows this.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the secret's a little bit more out now because you know we have access to more stuff from early in Hogan's career. But you know, but he definitely did have that. He definitely did have that ability, especially when he was young. You know, as he kind of aged, his stuff did not look that good. But.
Anyways, sorry.
No, it's okay. We're pretty much got to hit on Kevin Nash and Hulk Hogan in pretty much in every podcast that we do because we're still working out our issues from 1999. So
we're still very bitter.
Yes. Anyway, Brock has a regular suplex that sends Roman under the ropes to the floor. Brock is bleeding from the mouth. Another belly to belly from Lesnar sends Roman into the ring. There are a chance of 8, so I believe that's the 8th suplex that has happened. Lesnar hits an F5, but Roman kicks out. Lesnar then gives a smirk. Lesnar then takes off his MMA gloves, and we learn that Suplex City is the number one trending topic on Twitter, which I tried to imagine Gorilla Monsoon telling us.
it just doesn't fit.
No. What Bobby Heenan would say to that, you know, would say something about the humanoids, and it doesn't matter what the humanoids care about, you know.
I think you can split this match into 3 segments pretty cleanly, and I think when Roman kicks out of that second F5, that's the end of the first segment.
Okay.
Like, when Lesnar starts taking his gloves off, and his hands somehow get bigger.
Yes.
Like, on TV, like, how did his hands get double the size with the gloves off? How does this – he's a monster.
He certainly is.
I think that's the beginning of the second act of this. And the second act is really interesting.
Yes. Yeah, Lesnar picks Roman up by the head, slaps his face. Roman keeps calling for more, and then Lesnar continues to hit him. Roman then laughs. We get 2 more German suplexes in an F5 in quick succession. Roman then kicks out once again. Lesnar looks befuddled by the circumstances. It sort of reminds me of Austin when he's hitting Rock with the chair at WrestleMania 17, and Rock won't immediately give up on that. It sort of gives me. There are sure other matches where this has happened as well. Obviously, this is the whole like you know I'm hitting this guy with all these finishers and he's not being pinned is definitely a WWE formula. Although I think it works well in this match. It doesn't feel like finisher spam that it's felt like in other things like Rock Cena for instance. But that moment definitely called back that in my mind.
I guess it's because we all just accept that Lesnar has an unlimited amount of F5s in him.
Yes.
And we just get we think that other wrestlers only have a couple of finishers in them, but sure. We just get that Lesnar can F5 people all day long.
Yeah, I mean he seems like he has limitless energy for a guy who is his size.
Yes.
He looks really physically good in this match. Like more like so like he's a little bit I think he's a little bit leaner. Like, even though he's really muscular, like he doesn't seem to have like the extra fat that he sometimes has.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just looks
great.
Yeah, I mean he looks like even like you know more fearsome than he normally does in this mess, which is you know saying something.
Brock Lesnar literally scares the shit out of me. Like just legitimately, he's one of the most nightmarish human persons on the planet.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know how he is.
I've
never seen anyone else like him.
He is striking. There's no doubt about that. So Lesnar tosses Roman outside. Then he tries to post him, but then Lesnar gets thrown into the post himself. So finally, Lesnar is actually vulnerable. He takes a cut in the forehead, bleeding significantly.
Oh my God, yes. Does he? Wow, that's a 0.3 Muda.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I might even go 0.4, 0.5. I don't know.
Oh my!
Wow. Yeah. Look at you.
It's good, though. It's look, good, and yeah. I have no idea where he does the cutting.
He did it very well, yeah.
He did it so well. I don't think that's a real cut, but I don't see where he would have done it.
You mean you don't think it's one? You think it was caused by the post, or do you think you think he did it on his own somehow? We just don't see it.
I think he did it on his own somehow. Because I don't think the post does that. But I couldn't see where it is. And maybe the post did do it, but like yeah. Lesnar when he has bladed before. He does it himself. He doesn't let other people do it.
Right.
So far as I've seen, he does it. But I don't see where, cause he left the ring and he doesn't like lie down for a second or anything like, which is usually the way people do it.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to come right immediately as he's hit in the forehead. Yeah. I mean, it seems to come like right immediately. Like you don't see any of the normal signs that you would see as to how it happened. So exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure either. So he's staggering outside. The crowd senses the vulnerability that he feels at this point. The ref counts to almost a 10, but Lesnar barely beats it in with a dazed look in his eyes. Could have taken the count out there.
It's a very good Sting Vader moment, because there's always that moment in like a Sting Vader match where Vader gets hurt by something that like he did himself, or Sting just like has a way like Sting always had that ring awareness. Where he was able to like maneuver in a way that got Vader off his feet, and then the crowd would really wake up because like, oh, you actually got a point.
Right. Yes. You know? Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, oh, maybe this will happen. Maybe this will finally happen. So Roman takes a football stance. He hits a Superman punch, but Lesnar stays up, barely holding onto the ropes. The crowd is going crazy at this point. It's kind of, you know, they're not booing. They're excited. Whether they're cheering Roman or just sort of excited in the moment is questionable. But or excited sure. that Roman Wright might win here is questionable. But they're not booing him anymore, which they've been booing him for pretty much any time he takes offense in the match, which is, again, a very small amount. Another Superman punch does send Lesnar down, but he immediately gets back up, still holding the ropes, really struggling, you know, really selling the, like, he's very shaky, although still this menacing beast. Another Superman punch misses. Lesnar grabs a waist lock. Roman fights out of it, hits repeated headbutts, and then nails the punch. Lesnar staggers back up. Reigns hits the spear, and then immediately goes back and hits a second one. Lesnar kicks out at two.
Yeah. And doesn't Paul Heyman just have the best heart attack outside the ring?
That's great. That is awesome.
Heyman's doing the performance of his career outside too, and no one's even paying attention to him.
Right. Yeah, because it's just everything's happening in the match. The crowd does boo when Reigns poses and teases another Superman punch. So they remember after that, you know, minute and a half.
They don't like him. Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We don't like this guy. That's right. Lesnar catches him, puts him on his shoulders, and nails the F5. Lesnar is unable to make the cover because of fatigue. And then Seth Rollins' music hits. He runs down this tremendously huge stage. Carrying the briefcase.
Oh, it's so long.
It is such a long run, you know. They really needed to have carts, I think, you know.
You know what? Maybe the drama of this moment might have been undercut by a slow-moving cart, though. Though how asshole would that have been?
Yes. He hands it to the referee, and Lillian Garcia announces that it is now a three-way match. Rollins kicks Roman out of the ring. He nails Lesnar with his curb stomp. Then he tries a second curb stomp, but he ends up on Lesnar's shoulder. Roman spears Lesnar with Rollins on top of Lesnar's shoulders. Rollins then curb stomp Reigns and wins the title. The fans are very excited about this. Rollins is, of course, another villain in the story. He has had the Money in the Bank since the summer, I guess. And had initially turned on Reigns as part of the Shield storyline, so this sort of links into that as well. This had been heavily, considered an idea here. I think a lot of the predictions sort of expected that this, you know, might be incorporated, and it kind of made sense as this is a hard match to decide how to end. This is sort of as good of a way as getting out of it as they
It's one of the reasons that we have pro wrestling is to do endings like this.
Yes. Yes.
Like Super Bowl, I hate to spoil it for you. Every year that the Super Bowl exists from now until the sun explodes on us, a third team is not going to run in and take it away.
That does seem unlikely, yes.
But it will happen in pro wrestling.
It will happen in pro wrestling. So I don't know. How do you feel about it being incorporated here? Like, how do you feel about the money back in general? Because I honestly, like, it was exciting for the first, you know, few years of it, but it just sort of seems tired now.
I don't know how you keep doing the Money in the Bank now that you've done this. And the following year's Money in the Bank with Sheamus just proved that to me entirely. It's like that there's nowhere but down for the Money in the Bank gimmick to go after you ruin a WrestleMania main event with it.
Yeah. But interestingly enough, like, they, like, you know, the crowd was much more excited about this, about being screwed here than they were about the idea of Reigns winning the title.
I don't think the crowd really wanted either of the main competitors to win. So yeah, sure, this is great. This is a fantastic ending for a match that shouldn't have ever been booked in the first place. But I don't know how. Okay, so if that's the case, how do we end up with WrestleMania 32 the way it is? Because WrestleMania 32 is WWE saying, you know what we should have really done with WrestleMania 31? Just let Roman win. That would have been the right thing to do. so I don't know. I think the fact that the Money in the Bank, that was the first time that the Money in the Bank cash-in thing changed the course of an existing match.
Right.
So either they changed the rules a little bit, or they never had rules in the first place, and they were lying to us about that. Because they used to have rules, right? There used to be rules about the Money in the Bank. It used to be that the opponent had to be conscious. Well, that changed, I believe, when Daniel Bryan cashed in on the Big Show.
Right.
Right? I don't think the Big Show ever woke up for that match. And I was pretty sure that you had to start a match with Money in the Bank, right? You couldn't just walk into anything that was already in progress, but here we are having that happen. Even Michael Cole, the supposed good guy commentator on this thing, is like, that was pretty clever. but it's like, I thought we had rules. Is this not a thing that happens? No, because it's pro wrestling and they make it up on the spot, which is fine if that's what you manage your expectations to expect. And I do think that WrestleMania 31 was kind of saved by this, but I don't know how they got to WrestleMania 32 again with the same thing.
Yeah, well, I guess part of it is everybody got hurt, so
What do you think the main event of WrestleMania 32 would have been if no one got hurt?
I mean, I guess Reigns versus Cena, maybe. I don't know. I haven't been following that closely on kind of where they've been building things, so I don't.
Sure.
I'm not the best person to ask that question to. But,
sure. Yeah.
But
wouldn't have been Reigns versus Triple H. That's for sure.
No, I would not have expected that to happen. I mean, the argument is that okay, Reigns wasn't ready here. You give him another year to like figure out a character and figure out like a way that we can get people behind him and then go for it again. I mean, that's sort of what I would kind of consider this decision to be.
A lot of the 2015, 2016 calendar year of Roman Reigns. And I don't think they did much to get people behind him.
Well, I don't think it worked, but I'm saying that would be like that might be the decision behind this is like, okay, it's not working with him, but you know, we'll punt another year, but we'll give Rollins the big moment here because we can't, because they don't want Lesnar to lose. So, I'm assuming that was also an issue. So
I think probably, I think it was probably also a big issue that like, we like Lesnar is white hot and we don't want to end him.
Right. But we don't want him to be champion anymore because we don't want to have a part-time champion anymore, you know? So
yes.
I'm assuming all those. Yeah, so they have a lot of things. They have things that are difficult to deal with. So I guess I understand that that's kind of the only solution that they had to make the fans happy and achieve their goals. And which, yeah, I didn't love it because I was really excited for like what was happening in the match, and I would have really been excited to see a great, you know, finish between the two, and you know, see like this great fight that's happening. You know, I feel like, okay, this is an interruption to that, and it just kind of feels cheap and silly to me. I'm an older person. I like rules sometimes. I don't always need them to be followed, and I get, you know, you just throw things out there sometimes, and that makes wrestling fun too. But I do feel like sometimes there's a higher proportion of that in WWE than I generally would like in my diet of wrestling.
Agreed.
Yeah. So we end with Rollins running up the ramps, posing with the title, swinging over his shoulders. We see Heyman talking up close to Lesnar. We see some fireworks with Seth holding the belt. Finally, we do show Reigns and Lesnar briefly, both exhausted. One of them's on the mat. I believe Reigns is on the mat and Lesnar's on the floor. But it is really very much a focus on Rollins, which I guess he just won the title. So that makes sense. I guess the other thing is that Rollins was never really a character that I've had that much of a connection with.
Sure.
So I was kind of thought like he's just sort of like this sniveling guy who wins the title. It's like, oh, okay. Now, I mean, and I guess you can have those characters be champion, and that's sort of fine.
Miz won a WrestleMania not that long ago.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of that one either. But
no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I will say I feel like they made everything they could out of Rollins as champion over 2015.
Yeah,
he did actually have like the best match of the month, most months.
He did pretty well with it. I'm not the biggest fan of like the character, but he did have some good performances. That match with Sting was incredible.
His matches with Ambrose, his matches with Cena, they were all really, really great. He was running with it. He was doing I think it was a fantastic run, and unfortunately it got cut short for the same reason that what 30% of the roster got injured last year.
Sure.
Good God.
Yeah.
At what point in time are they going to make the ring a little safer? You know, they have to be asking, like, can we make this a little, like, springier or something? Like, so that everyone doesn't get hurt this week?
Well, yeah, well, they made the ring safer, like in the late 90s, I think, but...
They did, yeah.
Yes, but, I don't know if they're going to do more... Yeah, that could definitely be... I don't really, you know what's going on with... Yeah. All the interesting
stuff. Daniel Matheson has that wonderful idea of just wrapping everyone in bubble tape.
There you
bubble
go.
Bubble wrap. Like, everyone gets into the bubble wrap. That's wrestling gear now, is just bubble wrap.
There you go. You instead of a wrestling ring, we could actually just have, like, everything competed in, like, a giant circle, like, made of bubble wrap.
I think you go full force, you get yourself a bouncy castle.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I feel like there may have been some hardcore matches that were competed in a, the hardcore title, in a bouncy castle.
Those aren't canon.
I believe they are canon. Are they on the network?
Yeah, probably.
If any of them are on the network, I believe they're canon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, can't wait for that playlist.
So, yeah, you know, so I do wonder, like, I do wonder what Reigns is going to have to do to be accepted at all, like, for WWE to make this work. I feel like they were able to kind of make the split in fandom work with Cena, because he pulled in so many people, and he also energized the people who disliked him, that it created a bigger audience. But
I don't think you can do that twice. Certainly not in a row.
Yeah. I mean, I think Cena's just such a like once in a lifetime kind of, guy to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to necessarily work again, but I don't feel like, I feel like just the grassroots fans that are just going to like say no to guys who are in the mold of Roman Reigns. Like, I mean, they're gonna pick guys who they feel like are their own, who are, you know, like authentic, who, you know, whether it's because they were in the indies or, you know, whatever the appeal is of guys. I feel like I feel like Dean Ambrose is, you know, seems like the next best candidate for kind of that treatment of, you know, the fans getting behind them. I mean, you know, Eddie Guerrero got that. Even when WWE tried to turn him heel, there was like a fan, you know, very much a fan movement that absolutely like said, no, we're not going to boo him. We're going to, you know, get behind him. Obviously, you know, it happened with Benoit and with, you know, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, as you mentioned. And
I kind of feel like it happened with Steve Austin, like when they turned him heel, like the fans just, they just didn't accept it. It just never stuck.
I think it was a much smaller, you mean like the 2001 heel turn?
Yeah. Feel like that was, there's a little bit there where they're just like, no, we don't accept this. Turn him back right now.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think that was sort of a different phenomenon a little bit, but I agree that I don't think that was like the hardcore fans as much. I think that was more like the not on the internet fans. That was more like that audience that was like, you know, we love Steve Austin.
The only reason we're here is because of him.
He's our folk hero. Like we can't get into this kind of thing. I mean, I think most of them left rather than rejected it, but there were a lot that did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, because if I'm.
So basically the issue is, how do you solve a problem like Roman Reigns, right? It's.
Yes.
Because he should be. He seems to have most of the elements, and God knows they want him to be that.
Right.
But I don't know exactly what they want that to look like. So what? He's going to beat Triple H at WrestleMania 32.
Maybe.
And then he's going to go on and have a nice long title reign. Let's call it 7 years or something. And what? Business will triple? Like, is that what they think is going to happen?
Well, I mean, I assume they'll kind of do what they... I mean, I assume they'll just kind of have him be the signature star. I mean, I assume they'll eventually put him, have him face Cena, which I guess I don't know if that's necessarily a, you know, what that's going to kind of do to the audience. I don't know exactly what the, it just seems like it's really difficult to have a guy who you're just fighting the reaction with the crowd and also trying to tell the story. I mean, it's much easier to tell a story if you can get kind of, you know, most or all of the crowd kind of behind what you're doing there. And I feel like it's really hard to do that in the times of stories that WWE normally has told traditionally. Now maybe you just sort of, you know, kind of split everything that you do and just accept that, okay, the, you know, kind of have it be more of like a, you have the characters less be villains than heroes and have them more just kind of be personalities that are good or, you know, who are rooted for, or rooted against based on situation.
I guess. So there's one thing that I think they should absolutely do is that they should maybe make him show some of himself. I think whatever character they're making him play is the thing that's failing him the most.
Okay.
Like whatever they're putting on him, because like I've seen some of the documentaries, I've seen like that WWE 24 thing that they had for him, and he's like a genuinely really nice guy, it seems, and he has an awesome looking family, and they should be on the show.
Sure.
Like he has a really cute little daughter, and she should be on the show. Like I feel like if they want people to like him, maybe turn him into a likable person with sympathetic issues. And like, I don't know, like maybe point out the fact that he's actually like Samoan. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, they
do bring it up here, calling him part of a dynasty, you know, with The Rock.
They do.
And, yeah.
I think they should push that button more.
Yeah.
I think that's a big one because they just kind of hint at it sometimes when it could be a huge part of him. I do think his outfit does him no favors.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you think if they push the right buttons with him, they can get enough people behind him where it's not going to...
He's totally a good enough wrestler. And his good matches get ignored because his personality sucks.
Sure.
I think that's what it is. And because they keep making him beat the, like, you know, the internet darlings of the show. You know, like, I think putting him in one-on-one matches where he cleanly beats Daniel Bryan and Cesaro and guys like that for no reason, I don't think that helps him. I think it just makes it look like WWE shoving him down our throat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he should be buddies with those guys and not fight them.
Yeah. Do you think there's an intent to, like,
I think his bro-ness is actually a plus. The fact that he can be friends with someone like Dean Ambrose, Cena can't be friends with anybody, right? That's, like, the weird thing about Cena is that he's totally friendless.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Roman somehow has the capability of being friends with people. Use that.
That's a fair point. I don't know.
He doesn't turn on people. I think that's nice.
Yeah. I think there are, they kind of want him to be sort of a loner, I guess.
That's the mistake, I think, is that they want him to fit into this little thing that, like, they think is like a anti-hero or something should be. He should just be a nice guy who has pals and a family.
Sure.
I think that's the way they should take him.
I like pals.
Yeah, pals are good. Friendship is magic in wrestling.
Yeah, friendship is magic, yeah. And in My Little Ponies.
He tells us this every week.
Yeah. yeah. Well, okay. Let's take Twitter question. The questions from the internet on
we have
the,
a couple from the internet Twitter. Darlings.
Yes, from the internet darlings. Let's see. Pure Gristle, he had a few questions for us. Do you think the Seth cash-in was the plan all along? If not, when would they have used the cash-in? I don't know. It just seems sort of like the obvious way to end it to not lose to Lesnar, to not have Lesnar lose and to avoid the crowd getting angry if Roman won, but also avoid, the crowd, avoid Roman getting a clean loss, let's say, in a big profile match. So I guess it just sort of made sense to do it. So I would have guessed that it pretty much was the plan all along.
I think maybe the day after the Rumble, they had that figured out.
Yeah. Loaded Glove at the Loaded Glove. Should Reigns have beaten Lesnar, become champ? If so, how would fans react to him today? So, yeah, you kind of alluded to it, but what if they had actually just, had the, if they'd just been brazen enough to do that, do you think that would have benefited Reigns at all, or do you think he'd be basically in the same position that he's right now? Assuming nothing else changed significantly about it.
Because I think, like Reigns didn't change this year, the roster changed, and I think Reigns is in the position he's in because there is no other roster, all their guys are gone. It's crazy. I can't remember another year where something like this happened.
Yeah.
I think that if Reigns had won at WrestleMania 31, he'd be in the mid card in WrestleMania 32. I don't think he'd be in the same spot.
Okay. All right.
I think they would have pulled the trigger and it would have fizzled and they would have given up.
I could definitely see that. Yeah. Omar from Houston, do you think there's anything that WWE would plausibly do to drive away a substantial number of their fans?
That's a fantastic question.
I mean, I guess they have over the past 15 years or so. Because they did drive away a lot of their fans. Now you could say, well, that was created by a bubble that wasn't going to last. So, plausibly do. I don't know.
I don't know. Wrestling's pretty fun even when it sucks. That's the problem.
I mean,
it's still pretty good.
I still like dipping my toes into it. I'm not watching every week anymore, but dipping my toes into it is fun once in a while. So, I doubt I'll completely ever abandon it, although I guess I'm not really generating much money for them.
No, me neither. I turn on and off the subscription.
Sure.
Sometime.
Same here.
Like about 6 months of the year, I'm not subscribed. I take breaks, but that's been my MO forever, is to take breaks and make my own seasons. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's a healthy way to do it.
Yeah.
I think what do you do? I mean, what do? Do you pull a WCW? You can't. You're not owned by a bigger company. WWE will never die the same death other wrestling companies did.
Sure.
It's just not how they function. And like the worst wrestling show is still better than like a lot of stuff out there.
That's a good point. Colm at Pillar Graves, has there been another WrestleMania main event with a bigger disparity between build and fan expectation and match quality?
As in, like, nobody was looking forward to this going in, and it's actually pretty great?
Yeah, I believe that would be, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, because usually when the hype is there, maybe the match lives up to it, but it often doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
I remember some great builds and some lousy WrestleMania main events.
Sure.
I mean, WrestleMania 27 is maybe the big one, because I loved the build to that match.
Right.
And hated the match itself.
Yeah. Undertaker Batista at 21. It wasn't the final match, but it was one of the title matches.
23.
Oh, 23. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. But I agree with you there. That was kind of a lousy story, and they stole the damn show.
Yeah. And Undertaker had not had his, you know, had not yet. That was kind of the first in his streak of great matches at WrestleMania, and Batista had never really had a match at that level before. So,
it's true. I will say the same show too, like Cena and Michaels. Like that was a way better match than I thought that they were gonna have.
But they were performers where I think that was more reasonable expectation than. I mean, true. I think it exceeded expectations. But that was also a fairly well built match too.
I guess that other than Undertaker and Batista, which I think is maybe the best example we're gonna come up with, I can't remember the last time that they put such a mediocre guy in the main event of WrestleMania as they have Roman. And I don't mean to say that Roman Reigns is mediocre, but I mean compared to a Brock Lesnar.
Sure.
He's not on his level.
Sure. I don't know. Would we consider Hogan Rock at all? Would that sort of be a...
At 18?
I mean, people were excited about that match, but I don't think anyone expected it to deliver on the level that it did.
I guess, although I think people look back on that one pretty fondly. And I think the match itself... was about as good as you could ask for.
Well, that's what I mean. I think it was like, it was exciting because it was like, oh, you know, the big star from WWF, the big star from WCW, and that had never happened at that level. But
right.
And it was Hogan back for the first time in 9 years. I mean, all that was big, but I don't think anyone like.
That Hogan couldn't do it is the thing.
Yeah, I think people thought Hogan was washed up at that point, and people also thought, and I don't think the reaction any kind of reaction like that. I mean, that was another level, obviously. You were there, you would know, but
it's impossible to replicate because they've censored the whole thing. That's how much they don't want you to know what it was. I don't know, like maybe Rock and Austin, the first one at WrestleMania 15, where Rock really wasn't ready for that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know. That was another really short match. Like that one's like 15 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's I liked it better upon rewatch than I did initially. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously the other ones are better. Yeah, I don't know. Those would be the ones that stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last question. At Pure Gristle, do you think the match will ultimately be remembered fondly?
Yeah, I think the match is great, and I think the decision to end it with Rollins is legitimately creative.
Yeah.
You know, I think it solves a lot of the problems.
Well, at least it delayed a lot of the problems. But
it delayed a lot of the problems.
Yes, postponed a lot of the problems. So
yeah, it did. It sure did.
Yeah.
But that's about as good as you can ask for sometimes.
That's fair. Yeah, that is fair. Hey, a procrastination is...
And I think the match itself is pretty great. I think the match itself is pretty great.
Yeah,
It's rare to get a lousy match out of Lesnar these days.
Right, it's a lot of fun. It is entertaining. And it's well told. I think it'd be like if it had, honestly, in a different context, if they had been able to have a really satisfying, like emotional, like. You know, Bret Hart, Steve Austin type ending to the match that just like was. Like a crescendo that sort of matched everything that led to it, just between the two of them, then I think this would might be like one of the top five WrestleMania matches of all time.
Because there are absolutely moments there where it reaches that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's more, I think, top 20, you know, at level, which is obviously still fantastic.
Sure.
But
I got a question for you. Is it your favorite WrestleMania Lesnar match?
Yes.
He's got Angle, Goldberg, Triple H, and Taker before this.
Yes, I don't like the Angle match. I enjoy the Goldberg match as sort of like a weird, like, fiasco, crazy situation. And I think the action.
I mean, that's a class in a course by itself, that match. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think the action's better than people remember it being. The Triple H match, is okay. Nothing like special, not terrible. Just that feud was just didn't, yeah, it was not a good use of either guy. Rewatching the Undertaker one, I actually liked it better than initial viewing. And obviously, it has, you know, one of the incredible endings of all time. But yeah, I would
good outfits. That like WrestleMania 30 Undertaker outfit is maybe my favorite Undertaker outfit ever.
It's a good one. Yeah.
I haven't
thought it through, but you know, but it's yes, it stands out as one of the best for sure.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to bring up?
Was that it for questions?
There were some, but we pretty much addressed them. Throughout the show. So.
Right.
Yes.
No, I think it's good. Do you want to talk about WrestleMania 32 at all?
Sure. What do you want to talk about WrestleMania 32?
I think it's gonna be a great show despite the somewhat wonky, crazy, weird build. I think it's gonna be 5 hours long, because there's like 9 matches.
Okay.
I think it's gonna be really exhausting, and if you count the NXT show as like part of the whole thing, then it's gonna be like 7 hours long. I think that's way too much wrestling. It's gonna take me a month to watch WrestleMania this year.
Right,
like, that's how it's gonna be for me.
Yeah, I'm as you know, but as people, well, maybe you don't know. I'm you know, I'm getting married, but you may not know that I'm getting married on April 4th, the day after WrestleMania. So.
This is not on Monday.
Yeah, I'm not going to. I'll watch it later, but I'm not going to watch it when it happens.
Yeah, you'll watch it sometime in May.
Yeah. maybe sooner than that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Triple H and Roman Reigns. I guess it'll be interesting enough.
Could save the whole show by putting them on like third last.
Yeah, I guess it depends on who wins too. Do you think Shane and Undertaker will be the main event?
Yeah, I do. I honestly do. I think if they have any brains, they'll put it on the main. Yeah, because I think they know that Roman and Triple H is tepid. I think they know that.
Right.
And they don't ever want to do WrestleMania 25 ever again.
Right.
They know that. They know that stank.
Triple H is in those so many times. It's weird.
He does come up a lot.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I from what I've seen of the buildup, it's been weird. I don't like Shane, as you know, so I don't know. How do you feel about seeing Shane back and like him wrestling the Undertaker?
It's weird. It's very left field. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is one of those things where it was the Undertaker's idea. Like, he was just like, you know what? I need someone easy.
Yeah.
I'll do WrestleMania, but I need someone easy who will do all the work.
Sure. But like 45-year-old Shane McMahon seems like I get it, but it's the name and the shock and all that.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say they may do a spectacle thing that just, you know, people get into and it, you know, and it works, but I would not bet on that. That's for sure.
I think that they're either going to do one of two things. Either it'll be the main event and it'll be shockingly amazing, or it'll take the same spot that like Triple H and Sting took at WrestleMania 31, where it was sort of like the end of the first hour and a half of the show.
Sure.
And it was like an excuse to bring out a bunch of guys and have a little spectacle.
Right.
Right. It's sort of this cute little end of Act One. But I don't know. I think if Triple H and Roman goes on last, that's a mistake. I don't know what they put in the main event instead.
Yeah.
But I think they could save a lot of Roman Reigns by not making him finish WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't think...
In the same way that, like, they... Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I don't think they'll put Ambrose Lesnar last. So, I mean, yeah, those are the only two options, really. Shane, Undertaker, or Triple H, Roman. And,
could be. Yeah, and maybe it'll all work out great. I don't know. I think it'll be a great show. I think they have great plans, but I think how they got there is just as bad as last year.
Yeah, you never know. Sometimes shows turn out better than you expect. So,
Sure,
and last year's
absolutely.
WrestleMania, yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Sting Triple H last year. So, for what it was. So yeah. Good times.
But that's about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know how I feel. I'm glad we did the show. I enjoyed the show. I don't know how I feel about wrestling. I don't know how I feel about life right now. But, you know, I feel pretty good about life. I don't know how I feel about wrestling though.
I'm completely on the same page as you.
All right. Well, fair enough. All right.
I want to do something very different with if I continue doing wrestling stuff at all, I want to do something very, very different with it. But I don't know how much longer I can go. I don't know how much longer I can be a voice.
Yeah. Well, as long as you're willing to come back once a year and talk the previous WrestleMania main event with me, then
This, Jason, this is always a pleasure. I never have to wonder about this.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. So hopefully everyone listening has enjoyed it as well. We'll see. Anything you want to bring up that you are working on? I don't know if like wrestling is the best thing for you to plug right now, but yeah,
Well,
anything else that you're doing?
International Object is still there. I
Yeah.
actually did a lot of sort of plumbing the last couple of months to make sure everything works nicely. And even if I don't ever work on it ever again, it'll be this nice totem to what was. But I don't see me standing still for very long with that.
All right.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm writing. People can check me out at sawyerpaul.com or send me a tweet at underscore sawyerpaul. I'm always there. I'm not going anywhere.
All right. Well, cool. I'm always glad to have you around. Thanks everyone for checking out the show and listening. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find me on Twitter at WrestleSpective. WrestleSpective is on iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to leave a rating and review, that would be awesome. It helps other people find out about the show and makes me feel good that somebody likes my show. So until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.